If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 861. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about temples, stupas and trekking, rooftop bars, Durbar squares, and the Himalayas as we go to Nepal. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Nepal. I'd like to welcome the show Sean Hira, a tour guide and also a blogger at faroutraveling.com. And Sean has come to talk to us about Nepal. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. Longtime fan. Looking forward to going over Nepal.
And what is your connection with Nepal before we get started?
Yes, I recently traveled around Nepal, spent 2 weeks seeing some of the highlights and some of the less touristy parts, and I fell in love with the country. I got really close to my local guide, and I had a lot of feedback from my post on Instagram, and all of a sudden I created a blog post, and now I've got a lot of interest, and I'm going to be running a tour there in April 2024, April 11th through April 21st.
Excellent. Why should someone go to Nepal?
Nepal's a little bit of an underrated destination. It's a landlocked country in the Himalayas, sandwiched between two powerhouses, China and India. My favorite part about Nepal is really the harmony between Hinduism and Buddhism and seeing those cultures coexist so peacefully from a tourist perspective. A lot of people go there for the trekking and the intense base camp trekking. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that probably comes to your mind is Mount Everest. But there is so much more to Nepal than Mount Everest or Annapurna. The Himalayas are ingrained in the culture there, but right. You can see so much more than just trekking in Everest.
And we do have a separate episode on the Annapurna circuit and on Everest, and we're not going to do them today. So right. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us, Sean?
Yeah, pretty much everyone's going to be arriving in Kathmandu International Airport. Unless you're overlanding from India, I would say pretty much everyone who's only got 7 to 10 days is going to be arriving at the International Airport of Kathmandu. And we're going to spend 2 days in Kathmandu at the beginning of the trip. Then we're going to make our way west to Bandipur Village in the foothills of the Himalayas. And I'm going to spend 2 days there. And then we're going to transfer to Pokhara. And we're going to do a 3-day moderate trek to summit to Poon Hill in the Annapurna region and staying in a village homestays along the way. And we're going to come back to Pokhara and spend a day there. And then we're going to fly back to Kathmandu for 1 day and experience the things we didn't get to do at the beginning in Kathmandu.
Excellent. So you started us in Kathmandu. What are we going to see in Kathmandu?
Right. Most backpackers are going to stay in Tamil, the touristy hub. However, okay. I actually recommend staying in Pathan Durbar Square. It's about 30 minutes south of Tamil, and it's easily accessible from the airport. And Tamil is for those who prefer the backpacking touristy area and the hustle and bustle. But I prefer to stay in Pathan at the beginning of the trip and Tamil at the end of the trip. And the reason I prefer to stay in Pathan is because The Tom Derber Square is the most beautifully preserved historical area in Nepal, in my opinion. And it's got one of the three Derber Squares in the Kathmandu Valley. And in my opinion, it's the most well-preserved. Kathmandu was hit by the earthquake in 2015. So you have the Kathmandu Derber Square, which was pretty heavily impacted by that earthquake. You've got Bhaktapur Derber Square, which is a little bit further away. It's more of a day trip. And then you've got Pathan Derber Square, which is very well-preserved. And it feels very local and more slow-paced. And the Derber Square is just absolutely beautiful. For this itinerary, I'm going to assume we're going to stay in Pathan for the first 2 days. And then at the very end, on our last night in Kathmandu, we'll stay in Tamil.
And you said of the Derber Squares, what's a Derber Square, Sean?
Great point. These are the medieval historical cities in the Kathmandu mm-hmm. Valley that were the historical capitals. There used to be three different kingdoms, Bhaktapur, Pathan, and Kathmandu. Mm-hmm. And now these cities converged into the greater Kathmandu Valley. So you really will be going back in time and seeing the temples and the shrines and the Hindu culture in these Derber Squares.
And what I'm seeing is the Derber Square was where the prince used to receive people. So it was mm-hmm. the formal reception, outdoor reception hall for the prince of the place.
Yep, absolutely. You can see old baths there and old step wallahs and a bunch of temples and cows and monkeys.
And again, a step wallah.
Yeah.
Talking about a stepwell.
Yeah, stepwell. But that's what they mm-hmm. call them in India, Nepal, is stepwell.
Yep.
So they're very symmetrical, beautiful architectural baths where the water flows.
Yep. That's okay. I'll just ask for clarification occasionally, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page with us. What else are we doing in Kathmandu besides staying in Pathan Derber Square?
Yeah, so the first day, I'm going to assume a little bit jet lagged and not a full day because we arrived internationally. Usually on my first day, I just take it a little bit easy and battle the jet lag. So what we're going to do is we're going to do an orientation walk around Pathan Derber Square, and we're just going to marvel at the historical architecture and all the temples and shrines, and we're going to walk along the bazaars. And then at nighttime, I like to head to a rooftop overlooking the Derber Square and have some of Nepal's famous dish momos. And then a Barasinghe beer, which is a local Nepali pilsner, which ended up being my favorite go-to beer the entire trip. They have a bunch of rooftops overlooking the Derber Square in Pathan where you can relax and take in the city. Pathan doesn't have much of a nightlife. That's more of Tamil's. Pathan, we're here to fight the jet lag and call it early on day one.
Now, you were talking about doing a tour here. Obviously, people can come with you next April, but when you went the first time, you did not come with you, as it were. You did not do your tour. So how did you find a tour guide to understand what you were seeing?
Yeah, I signed up for a trek, and he does like the cultural highlights as well beyond just trekking. He runs trek to Everest Base Camp, Annapurna. He does food tours in Tamil. So I actually just linked up with him as an independent guide and got really close to him, picking his brain, asking a bunch of questions from the Maoist Civil War that happened in Nepal a couple decades to Bollywood movies that he recommends. We just became really close, and he showed me Pathan. So that's where I fell in love with Pathan, and it was my favorite area in the Kathmandu Valley.
Okay. What else are we going to do in Kathmandu?
Yeah, and for Pathan, it's a little bit less touristy than Tamil, as I earlier mentioned. And just for accommodation, I recommend Hotel Traditional Stay. It's a nice traditional hotel that serves breakfast every morning and has quality drinking water, and it's right adjacent to the Derber Square in the heart of the historical district.
Okay.
And then the next morning, I've got a full day of Kathmandu sightseeing. So we're going to wake up pretty early, ideally before sunset, probably since we're pretty jet lagged. And we're going to catch a taxi to Bodhanath Stupa, which is one of the largest stupas in the world, where Tibetan monks have their morning rituals and they circumnavigate the stupa. So we're going to go at sunrise and join the monks, and we're going to be respectful, and we're going to pay a small donation, and we're going to slowly circumnavigate the stupa, and we're going to circle the prayer wheels and just admire the monks and their morning routines. It's a very spiritual experience, and it's a very large, beautiful stupa with the Buddha eyes and the prayer flags fluttering everywhere and incense burning and bells jingling, and it's really peaceful there in the mornings. And also along the walkway, when you're walking around the stupa, they have plenty of two-story restaurants. So after you spend your time circumnavigating the stupa, and note, make sure you always circumnavigate clockwise, just follow as the Buddhists are doing, there are restaurants there. So I recommend going up to the second story of one of the restaurants overlooking and getting a breakfast and a coffee at the Budenath Stupa.
Okay.
Yeah, after spending your morning or a couple hours at that stupa, we can either walk. It's probably about a 2 mile walk, or you can take a quick taxi to Pashnupatinath Temple. Apologies for the butchering the pronunciation, but this is a sacred Hindu temple where the Hindu cremations take place. It's along the holy Bagmati River in Nepal, and it's really a beautiful Hindu temple complex. And foreigners are not allowed right riverside where the cremations are happening. However, you can go up to the back side of the temple, and you can have a great view overlooking the river, and you can see the temple complex in the background. It might be similar to Varanasi, India, if you've ever been there.
I have.
Yeah, so it's very similar to the sacred Ganges, but it's for Nepal. It can be quite intense. There's going to be monkeys all over the place. There's going to be bodies burning. There's going to be sadhus, the holy Hindu men, asking to bless you and asking for donations. And there's going to be cows mooing and pooing all around you. So it is quite the intense experience. And you know, you're really going to be like, wow, welcome to Nepal, first full day, and you're really jumping in the thick of it. But it's a must-see in Nepal, and it's a really beautiful temple complex. You can wander around there, and there's a lot to see.
Okay.
So after that, I figured I'd take up most of your morning, if not into the afternoon, and it's a really great experience. We just got to visit one of the holiest Buddhist shrines and the holiest Hindu temples back-to-back. It's a really unique experience of Nepal, of being able to walk in between those two destinations and two of the most spiritual places in Asia within walking distance of each other, of two of the major religions in Asia. But after experiencing those spiritual places, we're going to head to Temel. And that's where I really recommend my guide for a street food tour. Temel is quite intense. If Old Delhi and how intense Old Delhi is in India, it's very similar to that, where Google Maps doesn't work. It's a bunch of alleyways where congested with people and hawkers and cows and motorbikes whizzing past. So it's very challenging to navigate on your own if it's your first time in Nepal. So I highly recommend to orientate yourself, to do a walking tour, or what I prefer is a street food tour, because that's what we do in our tour, my tour on day one. And it really helps you understand the food. And my guide helps takes us into these back alleys, and you find dishes that you would never find as a tourist. And you know what you're eating is safe too, because you don't want to go somewhere that is not recommended by locals.
And if I go on a street food tour in Temel, what kind of street food am I going to find?
So you'll be finding samosas, a yogurt lassis, some food I can't remember even the name of, some buffalo momos with all different types of sauces. And
you mentioned momos before, and I didn't stop you. What is a momo?
So a momo is symbolic of Nepal. It's like a blend of a Chinese dumpling with kind of Indian curry in there. So they're like little dumplings, but sometimes they're filled with curry. They can be filled with chicken, buffalo, or vegetarian. And they're really the staple dish of Nepal.
Got it. Okay.
After doing a food tour or walking tour of Temel, you know, you might be a little bit culture shocked from seeing all what you've seen today, and you might be a little bit tired. At that point, I recommend heading to a rooftop in Temel. And Temel's got famous rooftops where you can sit six stories up, and they have a nice, like, kind of garden sit down area with the prayer flags, and you know, you can have a beer or get a meal, and you can watch the chaos from up above peacefully. So some rooftops that I recommend are Fat Monk's Rooftop, and Yog Rooftop also doubles as a hostel. Who might be a backpacker listening to this, Hostel Rooftop is a great hostel in Temel. And also from your show about the Everest Base Camp many years ago, your guest recommended New Orleans Cafe. So the first thing I did when I got there is I headed to New Orleans Cafe, and it did not disappoint. So I definitely echo your original guests, and I recommend New Orleans Cafe as well.
I'm surprised it's still there. That show has been quite a while ago.
Yeah, it's still there. It's still flourishing. And this is all obviously after COVID, so it's still flourishing.
Cool. It's good to know. Where to next?
Here I've got an optional add-on that's not going to be part of my tour or the itinerary for the 10 days that we're mentioning here that I alluded to at the very beginning. But if you have more time and want to experience more of the Kathmandu Valley, that's where I mentioned the Bhaktapur Durbar Square. So I would recommend, if you have an extra day, to add a day trip to Bhaktapur and Nagarkart. Nagarkart is a picturesque hill station located just outside of Bokdok Por Derbar Square. So in a day trip, you can see this picturesque hill station, which has views of the Himalayas. And on a really good day, a really clear day, you might be able to catch Mount Everest. And then the Bokdok Por is another beautifully preserved Derbar Square. The reason I just have this as an optional add-on is because we've been staying in Pathan, which in my opinion is a nicer Derbar Square. And throughout this itinerary, we're going to be seeing a lot of the Himalayas. To me, this is only if you have extra time, and it's not necessary if you only have 10 days. Okay. But I just wanted to put that out there in case someone had more time in the Kathmandu Valley. Because if I had one more day in the Kathmandu Valley, I would do this.
And it's not all that far from Kathmandu, it looks like.
No, it's an easy day trip and a pretty easy day trip.
Okay.
So now we're on to day three, and we're going to transfer to Bandipur. And so Bandipur is not so much on the tourist trail, but it's starting to become on the tourist trail. It's a good centric location west of Kathmandu on the way to Pokhara. So it's a good addition to a 10-day circuit through Nepal. And it's becoming more popular with tourists, but it still feels very off the beaten path. And to get there, if you have, like in our journey, we hire a private driver who has passed many safety records, and we have our own private minibus. Because trying to navigate public transportation in Nepal can be overwhelming, to say the least. I think if you take public transportation, the journey can take anywhere from 8 to 12 hours. The mountain roads are very windy with a lot of traffic. There's a lot of construction going on there to improve the infrastructure. But if you have a private driver, you can usually get there in 4 to 5 hours. I would recommend splurging on a private driver. However, if you're a budget backpacker, it is possible to take a bus. It might be uncomfortable and you might be crammed in there, but it's doable. So it really is an epic drive from Kathmandu to Bandipur. You drive adjacent to the Trishuli River, and you'll be passing remote villages along the way. And those villages will be like very lush with steep green rice fields. And they'll be at the foothills of the Himalayas. And this will be like the breadbasket of Nepal. So it's very green and lush, but you can also see the foothills of the Himalayas in the background. And so
this
after
is
that,
not a big city. We're going out here to a village in a rural area then.
Right. This is Bandipur Village.
Okay.
As you just mentioned, Bandipur is a village. It's very small and walkable. My group tour, we stay at the Bandipur Village Inn. It's an eco resort perched in the foothills overlooking Bandipur's rice terraces. Bandipur being a village, it can feel a little sleepy, but this hotel, this eco resort, is a great place where you can have a little bar there and you get breakfast and you have beautiful views overlooking the steep rice terraces and the foothills of the Annapurna. And when I come to Bandipur, I just really embrace the quaint vibes and I really relax there and get ready for our trek in Pokhara. So you really want to embrace the relaxing vibes in Bandipur. It's a sleepy village that's very authentic and it gets you a good feel of Nepali countryside.
Okay.
And so after checking in, we do an orientation walk around Bandipur and just admire the amazing views while taking in the local village life. And you can easily walk around all the beautiful temple complexes and the local bazaars. And then I highly recommend one of the four restaurants in the main strip area next to the local bazaar. They all have these back patios that are overlooking the Himalayan foothills. And there's nothing better than just hanging out back there and having some momos and another Barasinghe Pilsner beer and watching the sunset. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's one of those villages where you'll hear roosters crowing and you'll be passing by goats and there's not many cars here at all.
Okay.
After a nice relaxing day in Bandipur and taking in the quaint ambiance of the village life and countryside in Nepal, we're going to do day four also in Bandipur. But today we're going to incorporate a hike. If you have the capacity, I recommend waking up before sunrise because right outside of the eco resort that we stay in, Bandipur Village, there's a beautiful viewpoint of the Annapurna region. And in the mornings, you can usually see it very clearly. In the afternoon, it sometimes gets cloudy and harder to see. But the sun rises over the Annapurna peaks. And if you are disciplined enough to wake up for that sunrise, it was the best sunrise I've ever seen. So I highly recommend waking up for that sunrise. And after you take in one of the most beautiful sunrises in the world over the Himalayas and go get your breakfast at the Eco Resort, which is just right beside this viewpoint. And then after breakfast, I recommend we do a pretty easy hike. It's called the Great Wall of Bandipur. And when I say easy, for Americans, I'm saying about 2 to 2.5 miles. I would think that's about 5 kilometers for everyone else. And it's called the Great Wall of Bandipur because it looks like a miniature Great Wall of China. And it runs the range of Bandipur and the foothills around the perimeter of the village. So if you hike up to that, it's like a stone Great Wall that you can walk along. And it takes you up to one of the best viewpoints over the Bandipur village region. And you get expansive views of rice terraces with Annapurna in the background. And it's an awesome, easy day hike that I highly recommend.
Now, what altitude are we at this point?
So here we're not very high. I would say we're about 1,800 meters. Bandipur is definitely like lower. It's still very green and lush. But you okay. are in the very foothills of the Himalayas where you can see the snow-capped Himalayas in the background. But it's hot here. If you're not here in the winter, like Bandipur gets hot and it's very lush and green.
Yeah, it looks like it's actually more like 1,000 meters.
Or, yeah, thanks for clarifying. I didn't know.
3,300 feet. Yeah, that's okay. Yep. I caught you by surprise there.
No. When we do go into the trekking part, I do have the altitude noted. Okay. But yeah, here we're not very high enough.
Okay.
If you'd like to substitute that kind of easy hike of the Great Wall of Bandipur and you're more of an avid hiker, there's a very challenging 5 to 8 hour round trip hike to Ramkot Village, which is a very local village that can only be reached on foot. And it's one of those villages where people are going to be taking selfies with you because they rarely see tourists. And if you thought you fell off the beaten track in Bandipur, when you do this hike to Ramkot Village, you're really going to feel like you step back in time. There's no cars there. It's a really beautiful village, but it is a challenging hike, and Bandipur is hot. If hiking's not your thing, I would just recommend doing the Great Wall of Bandipur because that's also an amazing hike for not much effort.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Now, what season were you there?
I was there in April, so it's like springtime. It's a good time because wintertime can get really chilly. In April in Bandipur, it is the hottest point of our trip. So it's like high 80s for Fahrenheit during the peak of the day. And then at night, it's maybe sweater weather, low 70s.
Okay.
And then once again, after doing some day hiking around Bandipur and maybe shopping the bazaars and just taking in the quaint village life, I recommend going back to a dinner spot and watching the sunset with a beer and some momos.
I feel like this is a theme here.
Yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned, there's not much of a nightlife and Bandipur shuts down pretty early. The eco resort we stay in does have a bar that stays open late, but it's just a quiet little local bar where it's 3 people. But yeah, when there's not much to do, you can't go wrong with a Barasinghe beer and some momos watching the sunset over the Himalayas. But you really can't go wrong in Nepal with that. Definitely a recurring theme through my trip to Nepal. So the next morning, we're going to leave Bandipur. And as beautiful and awesome as Bandipur is, I really think once you start to do 2 more days, you might get a little bit bored. As you couldn't tell, we hit the highlights in 2 days, and we still had plenty of time to just wander around and do whatever we wanted and take in the quaint ambience. I don't think you need to spend too much time in Bandipur. Day five, we're going to transfer to Pokhara. And on my tour, what we do is we transfer to Pokhara and we stop for lunch. It's about a 2 hour journey with private transportation, and it's about a 5 to 6 hour journey with public transportation. And it really depends on traffic that day. But in my tour, we stop in Pokhara for lunch and we rent any trekking gear we need, because then we take a 4x4 Jeep to up to Uluri Village, which is about 30 minutes north of Pokhara and closer into the mountains. We're transferring to Pokhara, getting lunch, renting any trekking gear. And Pokhara is probably the most touristy backpacker hub in the whole country. It's where everyone goes to launch their trekking journeys out through the Annapurna region. And it's a nice place with a good restaurant and bar scene. So it's going to be a welcome after being in Bandipur and after being in trekking. So it is a little touristy, but for a great reason. And it's very easy to rent your trekking gear or even organize your trek. On my tour, we just stop there for 30 minutes to an hour and a half, and then we head up to Uluri Village. If you're doing this on your own, you're probably going to need to spend a day at least in Pokhara, and you're going to be able to organize your stuff on the ground, but it's going to take about a day at least, because you're going to need to get your permits. You're going to probably get a Sherpa to help carry your stuff. Sherpas are included in my guide. We have these wonderful Sherpas that carry our luggage for us. And then you're also now in Nepal. They recently passed this. You're not allowed to independently trek anymore. You need to have a guide with you at all times. So if you're doing this independently in Nepal, you're going to have to probably stop in Pokhara for a good day and organize your trek there. But it's very doable.
And I am assuming that they passed that rule because some tourists got themselves in trouble at the least.
Probably that. Also, it's a good way to bring money into the tourism economy. Sure. I think Nepal got hit pretty hard from COVID. Nepal's pretty dependent on trekkers coming in the tourism industry.
That makes sense.
And I should have mentioned this at the beginning. Nepal is a very cheap destination. There's also the infrastructure is built around tourists coming to trek. So there's a lot of competition, and it's not hard to travel Nepal. But I recommend doing a tour, because you would need more time if you're going to organize it all on yourself. But if you have limited time, then doing it on a tour is much easier. But if you have 2 or 3 weeks and you're flexible with your itinerary, it's not that hard to travel.
So I'm getting the impression if I go to Uluri, I'm not going to have trouble finding a guide or an outfit if I'm there by myself. It's just going to take a little time.
Let me clarify. If you go to Pokhara, you are going to have a hard time getting to Uluri Village on your own without spending a day in Pokhara and organizing it yourself.
Got it.
So then we get to Uluri Village by early evening, and this is where the trek starts. Tonight, we don't do any trekking, though. We just acclimatize in Uluri Village, and we stay in a tea house homestay. And the tea house homestays are very common in Nepal along trekking routes. They're basic accommodations that offer meals and clean drinking water. It's one step above a cabin with running water and kitchens and decent bedding to keep you warm at night, but it's no hotel, right? You might have cold water and you might need to use a squatty potty. So they're definitely rustic accommodations, and they're usually mom and pop run homestays. And there are a plethora of these along the trekking route. So every village you stop in, you'll see homestays, and you'll be able to get food and water pretty easily as long as you're on one of the more trafficked treks.
Okay. And so, then by this point, we're already at 2,000 meters or more than a mile up. So we need to pause for a second.
Correct.
Okay.
So tonight we're going to pause in Uluri Village, and we're going to acclimatize, and we're going to just relax, acclimatize, enjoy the views, and enjoy a communal dinner, meet other trekkers, and meet the local villagers who call this place home. And you're going to be surrounded by beautiful views of the Himalayas. And I mentioned we transfer to Pokhara and we rent any trekking gear. I always rent poles when I'm there. The poles help a lot. And they're very cheap and it's very easy to rent.
You're staying in tea houses, so you're not renting tents?
That's the beauty of Nepal is you don't carry a tent on your back. And there are Sherpas who, as I mentioned, Nepal is very affordable. So my tour, we pay Sherpas to carry all our stuff. So really all I carry is a camelback with water, a few granola bars, and trekking poles.
Okay.
And the Sherpas actually will carry 2 bags and they'll hike way faster than us. So your bags will always be waiting on you at the next tea.
Yep.
So the next morning we start our trek, and we're going to start nice and early, and we're going to trek to Gorapani Village. And it's a moderate 4 to 6 hours of ascending, and Gorapani is at 2,800 meters. So we're starting to get high. Here you may want to have a sweater, a snow cap, or some gloves for when the sun's not peeking out, but the temperatures can vary a lot. Like when the sun comes out from behind the Himalayas, it'll get hot quick. So you want to have some layers with you to be able to easily change in and out of layers and regulate your body temperature. And today we're just trekking through the beautiful Himalayas. We'll be passing monasteries, temples, local villages. And as I mentioned, it's a 4 to 6 hour, absolutely beautiful hike. This is the highlight of it. It's a great day of trekking, and it's not too challenging as long as you're in decent shape and able to push yourself a little. It's pretty doable. And then upon reaching Gorapani, it's going to be the same as the last night. We're going to relax, acclimatize, enjoy the homestay. We'll be staying at another tea house homestay, and we're going to enjoy another communal dinner around the fireplace and just relax and enjoy the being in the beautiful Himalayas. The next morning is day 7, and we're going to be summiting at that point. We'll be summiting to Poon Hill, and it's only a 1 to 2 hour hike from Gorapani, but it's the most challenging part of the hike. It's steep, and we get up to 3,200 meters. So we do this at sunrise, and you trek up, and you summit to Poon Hill, and from Poon Hill, you get a beautiful sunrise over the Annapurna Range. So what we do is we go like right around sunrise, and we do this challenging hike, and then we've reached the highest point in our trek. We've summited Poon Hill. We get this amazing view of the Annapurna region with sunrising right behind it. And from there, we descend back to Gorapani, and we actually get breakfast at our homestay. So during this Poon Hill hike, no Sherpas are coming, just the guides coming with you. You don't have the Sherpas bringing your bags and any gears, just staying at the Gorapani tea house where we stayed the prior night. So you're trekking back down to Gorapani where you stayed the prior night, and you have breakfast. And then we start the slow descent to Tadapani village, and that's 5 to 6 hours down, and we get down to 2,600 meters. So today we summit up to 3,200, and then we trek 5 to 6 hours down to 2,600 meters in Tadapani village. Here's where I recommend the hiking up is moderately challenging, but for me, actually hiking down wasn't necessarily challenging, but it put a lot of pressure on my knees because you're going step by step, and your knees are taking a lot of pressure. When I go back, I'll probably bring knee pads with me. Just to help, or knee braces, just to help absorb the downward momentum all day and the stress on my knees.
Interesting.
So here we're going to stay in another tea house in Tadapani village. And this is our last night in a tea house homestay. Then after enjoying one last night in a tea house homestay, we're going to wake up the next morning on day 8. And we're going to trek to Gandruk village, which is a much easier 3 to 4 hour descent. And once we get to Gandruk, we're going to celebrate with a lunch and cheers to one of the best treks of a lifetime. And after that trek, our 4x4 Jeeps are going to pick us up and take us back to Pokhara. In Pokhara, we're going to stay where I recommend is Hotel Lake Star, which is right next to Lake View in the tourist district. And as I mentioned earlier, Pokhara is a little touristy, but after trekking through remote villages, you're going to be happy to be in a kind of towards the area with a plethora of restaurants and bars, and there's a lot going on in Pokhara for good reason. And they've got a beautiful lake right in the center. After checking in the hotel, you might want to R&R a little, take a little nap and recovery. But then I recommend going out on the town and going to one of the many lakeside bars. It's got a very backpacker, eclectic party scene going on there. There's a lot of live music. There's great food. So I usually like to take my group to a lakeside bar and just celebrate a great trek. And yeah, that's the evening in Pokhara. So after a night out in Pokhara, we're going to sleep in, and day 9, I usually take it easy. It's a free day in Pokhara, and some great things to do are there's the World Peace Pagoda, and there's a giant Lord Shiva statue on the hill overlooking Pokhara. You can take a taxi up there. It's about a 20-minute ride up a very steep hill. And I highly recommend going there to seeing this giant Lord Shiva statue where Hindus will come and pay their respect. And it's a magnificent shrine overlooking Lake View and the city of Pokhara below. And there's also the Buddhist World Peace Pagoda there. So there's another example of Nepal. If you've got this giant World Peace Pagoda where Buddhists come, and then you've also got the giant Lord Shiva where Hindus come, and they coexist right beside each other. And then after that, I always get a trekker's massage to recovery. There's plenty of massages and spas around Pokhara that cater to trekkers who just got done doing a grinding trek. So you can get a recovery massage. You can go to a spa. There's great shopping options. As I mentioned, Pokhara is very touristy, so there's a lot of competition. And Pokhara is actually where I found the cheapest prices for tourist souvenirs, that in Tamil. So here's a good place to shop.
And what kind of tourist souvenirs did you buy in Pokhara?
I got like a shirt that showed Mount Everest. I got a bag for my wife. There's some bags. I got the traditional Nepali Nawari hat. Got Nepal, just some basic touristy stuff. There's also very popular are the singing bowls. So they're the healing Tibetan bowls that they will let you do a test on. You go in their store and they'll put it up to your heart. Or if you have a stiff back, they'll put it up to your back and they'll put it up to your head. And they spin around and it gives a nice monotone, ominous, like vibration noise. And it's what the Tibetans use to meditate.
Okay.
There's also Lake View, which is at the center of Pokhara. And I highly recommend renting a little paddle boat for sunset and going out there and just enjoying the sunset and paddling around Lake View. It's very easy and simple and cheap to rent a boat. You don't need a guide or anything. They just make you wear a life jacket and you just paddle out in a canoe or a kayak. And it's really enjoyable watching the sun.
Okay.
And then at nighttime, if you have the energy, go to one of the lakeside bars, go watch some live music and enjoy a nice gourmet meal in Pokhara. You can get a bunch of different ethnic food there. So if you really like Indian food, they have all sorts of Indian food there. They have Nepali, Chinese, Thai, a melting pot of Asian cuisines in Pokhara.
Okay.
That's it for Pokhara. From Pokhara, it's a long bus ride back to Kathmandu on day 10. So I recommend flying. You can really cheap fly from Pokhara to Kathmandu. Nepal Airlines don't have the best safety ratings, so if you're scared to fly, you take the bus. But I always fly. I'm not scared of flying. And it's literally a 30-minute flight versus a 8 to 12-hour bus ride. So if you're not scared of flying, I recommend just paying the $40 to $60 and taking that flight. So here we're coming back to Kathmandu, and this is where we're going to stay in Tamil. And Tamil has plenty of options. I usually stay at the Marriott there, but there's plenty of hostels for backpackers, and there's plenty of hotels, all price ranges and all comfort levels. What I did say for the last day is the Monkey Temple. And it's overlooking Kathmandu Valley. It's another giant stupa. It's a pretty popular tourist site in Nepal, and you hike to the top, and there's so many monkeys along the way. That's why they call it the Monkey Temple. The official pronunciation is Swayambhu Stupa. I'm definitely butchering that pronunciation, but that's why they call it Monkey Temple, because the Westerners can't pronounce the name of the stupa. I definitely recommend your last day in Tamil going to look at the Monkey Temple with beautiful views over the Kathmandu Valley. And you'll watch a lot of cheeky monkeys that'll steal Cokes, and they'll watch your sunglasses or don't have any food out because they're used to picking off the tourists. So that's how they survive.
Okay.
And then, yeah, you got one last night in Tamil where you can go back to New Orleans Cafe, which is what I always do because I love that place. And I'm thankful for your first guest recommending that. Or you can go to Yogue Hostel Rooftop, which has great vibes, and you can see the city. It's 8 stories up, and you can even see the Monkey Temple from there. Definitely recommend going to a rooftop in Tamil and, once again, having some momos and a couple beers and watching the sunset and take in your last night in Nepal with beautiful views. And day 11, I have us departing out of Kathmandu International Airport. And a just quick optional add-on that I wanted to recommend, I did this myself, is if you're not into trekking or if you have more time, there's a small town in the Kathmandu Valley about 45 minutes to an hour southeast. It's called Penalty, and the community runs a great homestay program. You can Google Penalty Homestay, and the local women run a really good homestay program where you'll be staying with an auntie, which is what they call in Hindu culture, like a mom who looks after you or someone you look at endearing as a mother, you call her auntie. And they'll take you into their homes and they'll cook for you and you'll stay in their actual homes. And they have a cultural event and they do a cooking class with you and they'll take you on a walking tour of the city. Penalty's Durbar Square is actually a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's at the confluence of two sacred rivers, the Roshni and the Panyumati. So it adds a spiritual significance and natural beauty to Penalty. And it's not super touristy. If you really want a local Nepali cultural experience, I highly recommend the Penalty Homestay. It's a really well-preserved ancient city. And I recommend 2 days. And I think if you stay there more than 2 days, you'd start to get a little bored. I think you can see everything in 2 days.
Excellent. Anything else you want to tell people before they head to Nepal?
Yeah, if you've never been to India or you've never been to Asia, Nepal can be quite intense. And I recommend if it's your first time in South Asia, it's really worth getting a tour. And I know I'm biased saying that, but
we understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. It really adds dividends. It's really affordable to get a tour there. If you try and do it yourself, you're going to end up maybe saving like $100 to $200. Navigating the public transportation system, sometimes getting ripped off by hawkers. Like when our guide takes care of us and answers all your questions, I've always been a budget independent traveler, but after doing this guide, I'm completely sold on there's some places in the world where it really pays dividends to do a group tour. Mm-hmm. And Nepal is definitely one of them.
Okay. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Nepal, or at least the part of Nepal we talked about. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think you might have been able to guess this. I'm sitting at that restaurant in Bandipur, overlooking the foothills of the Himalayas with a bear singi in hand and a plate of momos in front of me. And I'm watching the sunset and I'm hearing a local village life go by.
I was pretty much willing to bet that, but I had to ask. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Nepal.
It's a $30 visa on arrival. And when I showed up, it was chaotic, like classic South Asia. And the queue didn't really make sense, the line, and it was like a free-for-all. And I finally get up, and I didn't fill out any paperwork or anything. And the guy just says, give me money, give me money. And I give him $30, and he swishes me away. And I'm like, okay, I'm in Nepal. That's how I got my visa. And it's just a $30 visa on arrival, and I just had a guy say, give me money, give me money. Kept me moving.
And if you had to summarize Nepal in three words, what three words would you use?
Spiritual.
Yep.
Himalayas. And okay. Underrated.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Sean Hira, and you may have gathered that Sean's running a tour next April. You can find out more at faroutraveling.com, or you can go to Sean on Instagram at SCHIRA125. Both of those links will be in the show notes or in the lyrics of this episode. Sean, is there any particular blog post at faroutraveling.com you want to direct us to for your best post on Nepal?
Yeah, I've got a best Nepal itinerary with options. I've got my upcoming tour linked there as well with a bunch of detail on the tour, the price, the detailed itinerary, every hotel, all the names of the guides and so on. If you just go to the upcoming tours in the Far Out Traveling page, you'll be able to easily find details on the tours. And if you just want to find more out about Nepal, I've got a best Nepal itinerary with options blog post, and I've got top places to visit in Nepal that include more places than that are just on my Nepal itinerary mentioned in this podcast.
Excellent. Sean, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for Nepal.
Yep. I hope everyone can experience Nepal one day in their life and the spiritualness of Hindu and Buddhist culture backed by the Himalayas. It's an amazing experience. And I've traveled to, I think, over 40 countries, and Nepal really sticks out for me.
Thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, you can learn more by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I heard from Frank recently who wrote and said, "Hi, Chris, just wanted to send an email of thanks for your wonderful podcast. Unfortunately, ill health means I have been unable to travel to any of the fascinating destinations you feature for a little while. However, by researching, reading, and viewing other people's videos and photos online, I can make a virtual visit, which gives me a pretty representative experience. Art galleries and museums, for example, have their exhibits available to view online with lots of info and no one to get in your way of viewing. Many of my friends have suggested New Zealand as a place I should virtually visit. So next week, I'll be doing this with episode 797, Wellington with Kate, as a very thorough guide. It was a particularly great episode of the podcast. Thank you. Looking forward to going on more virtual holidays with you in the future. Best wishes from Frank." Thanks so much, Frank. Thanks for letting me know. Hope your health improves, and I wish you a virtual bon voyage for now. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, and thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more.